Stripe is the go-to choice for AI companies, from early-stage startups to scaled enterprises. 78% of the leading AI companies use Stripe to go to market quickly and scale globally. That includes pioneers like NVIDIA, OpenAI, and Perplexity. Stripe has developed cutting-edge tools to improve everything from fraud detection to checkout optimization. Whether you're aiming for incremental gains or planning for enterprise transformation, see how Stripe can help at stripe.com.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The last word.
With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
As we're in Cork today, we thought we'd invite Jennifer Horgan, Irish Examiner columnist, secondary school teacher, and Joe O'Shea, editor of Cork Bio, to join us for the week trending. But it's not about Cork we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what's been happening in Rome over the last 24 hours or so. And your impressions of it. Joe O'Shea, you love watching stuff like this and following stuff like this, don't you?
It was great, and it was very sudden because, like, we were seeing the black smoke, and then I saw on social media white smoke, and I ran to turn on the TV.
But you know, that's what always happens in a papal conclave. There's black smoke, but there's white smoke.
Catches me by surprise, man. But what actually, I was expecting to go on a couple of days longer because a lot of the commentators were saying, you know, it still could be a couple of days. But it actually happened, and it was really exciting, and it's almost like that huge big reveal is so theatrical, and it's the Catholic Church, so they do it in a very theatrical way. You know, when they say his name in Latin first, and everybody's trying to go, what's that? And then it was like, oh my God, it's the first ever US Pope. It was a really, really brilliant moment.
Did it capture your attention, Jennifer?
Not in the slightest. And I actively avoided it, so I have very little to say about it. I do, because I know it's a really simple point, but women are not allowed. Women are not welcome. It was a conclave of men appointing a man. You know, women are not involved in the higher rankings of the church, and I think it's ridiculous, and so I actively don't have anything to do with it.
Okay. And are you interested in any way in the man, and it is a man, obviously, who got the job, the fact that he's American, spent a lot of his time in Peru, and, for example, and this is relevant, has been active in social media recently, going up against J.D. Vance, the U.S. Vice President, about loving immigrants, and also took a pop at Trump as well on one occasion.
Yeah, that interests me. So the impact he will have, and of course I was happy to know about him once he was appointed, but I wasn't going to get involved in the fanfare and the smoke and all that stuff. Sorry, Joe. But no, I am interested. Now, I don't know, they're saying that he's a moderate, which I don't really understand. What's he between? You know, apparently he's made...
He's probably in between ordaining women and not ordaining women. Well, that'd be one example,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He'd be in between a lot of things, yeah.
And he's also said, you know, a few concerning things about the LGBTQ community. He has said, you know, that decisions have been made around abortion and inclusivity that go against the Bible. So that sort of stuff is concerning to me, and I wonder to what extent he is a moderate. But I am, very interested in what he had to say about Vance. As an American, that will be interesting to see how that plays out. From now on, I'll pay attention.
I think it's interesting. If the US is going to elect the Antichrist, that they also give us the Pope, you know, at the same time. It's fascinating that the church went for an American. Now, he's not the first American Pope, obviously, because we had a South American Pope before him. But it is fascinating now that a lot of the MAGA crowd already is calling him Marxist and woke and all this kind of stuff, whereas he would be right in their ballpark in terms of agreeing with them on many issues, including, you know, abortion for starters. So there's going to be how the MAGA crowd, how the US, how the White House deals with this guy from Chicago is going to be fascinating in the months to come. I think that's going to be the most interesting thing of this papacy.
Yeah, I wonder how American is he? Ben Finnegan last night said he's half American, half Peruvian, and I took issue with him saying, like, you know, just because you leave America in your early 20s, it doesn't mean you're not American anymore because you go to live somewhere else. Like, look at all the Irish people who've left over the years as 20-somethings or whatever, and who always regard themselves as being Irish.
I think Irish people will identify with this because of our missionary, recent missionary past, where Irish young Irish men and women will go off and never be heard of again for 20 or 30 years, but would definitely retain their Irishness. In the mid-90s, I was going to the absolute middle of nowhere in Rwanda, and a Honda 50 pulled up next to me. A man in his 60s took off his helmet and said, "Are you from Ireland?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Do you know of Tipper after winning the Munster final?"
I go on.
I am serious.
That actually
happened. It actually happened.
How did he think you were Irish?
Just he knew that. No, he knew that. He was sorry. I was over there. Oh, I should have given you the context, Mac. I was over there.
It's hardly like I see. He sees a white man. Okay. He must be Irish. No.
He knew Trokerab were bringing people over, and he had heard about it. And we were going to a range of Troker places up in the hill, up in the mountains in outside Kigali.
Yeah.
He knew that there were Irish people in the area, so it wasn't that simple, and it does sound a bit like a pub tale.
You can always spot an Irish head, though.
Yeah, that's true.
You can show your shades.
And I was wearing a Cork jersey as well. Like, yes.
I think Tipperary did win that year.
I think they did. I think I had good news for him, yeah.
Okay, well, let's move a little bit away from the Pope. But there's a story from Galway this week, Jennifer, and about a motorist who was caught using his phone during the clampdown on the Maybank holiday weekend. And what did he tell the Gardaí he was doing on his phone?
He said that he was on his phone because he was watching Mass.
Is that believable?
I don't care, I suppose. Sorry, I'm sounding very negative now. I just think the whole thing... I felt like when I read the story that it was meant to be funny, and I don't think anything about speeding or being on your phone is funny. I'm sorry, but there, you know, two people died over the weekend. Six people were seriously injured.
Yeah.
3,000 people were caught speeding. Driver behaviour is exceptionally poor in Ireland, and nothing about it is funny. So I was like, it didn't surprise me as a story. I would say it's possible that he actually said that as genuine defence.
I didn't think of it as being a funny story, right?
Okay.
I did think of it as being, my God, the excuses people will give to try and get themselves off from a motoring offence. Like, did he expect that the Gardaí would be impressed and say, "Ah, well, sure, if you're watching Mass, that's all right, so we let you go with it"? Or could it be that, you know, he did think that actually watching Mass, or maybe he was just lying about watching Mass and thought that it would. But I did think it was interesting as a line, even if it was true, it didn't mean he should get away with it.
Yeah, and I suppose it does reflect, I think, the attitudes that are there, that actually it's not so bad. You know, it's still somehow acceptable to be a very dangerous driver, I think. I don't drive.
We also have a broken system in this country. There's 840,000 people driving on provisional license at the moment. 840,000. There's 100,000, nearly 100,000 people driving on provisional license in Cork alone. It's a big problem for them because the average wait now for a driving test is 32 weeks, right? So you're waiting months and months and months for a driving test. You can't legally drive unaccompanied as a provisional. So you have young people who are trying to have jobs, trying to go to college, trying to get through their lives, mostly young people, and they can't really legally access road transport. Our driving test system is busted. Our attitudes towards road safety... red light braking. I do drive in Cork City, and red light braking is like a national pastime down here at the moment. It's crazy. So we have serious problems. This story about the guards, every now and again, a kind of a funny, in quotation marks, story will come out because the guards, sometimes I think, put them out there just to show people how insane some attitudes of some drivers are.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Eurovision. And there's a story just gone up in the Irish Times in the last 10 minutes or so that says RTE has received a commitment from the European Broadcasting Union to have a, quote, wider discussion amongst members concerning Israel's participation in the Eurovision Song Contest. I suspect they might have a discussion, but nothing's going to be done, Jennifer, is it? Israel will be taking part in the Eurovision Song Contest because continental Europe regards it differently to the way that they would regard the Russian invasion of Ukraine, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was only Slovenia and Spain raised similar concerns about Israel's involvement. And I know the European Broadcasting Union has said that they felt they could exclude Russia because the Russian broadcaster was sort of working in tandem with the state there, but they don't feel that's the case with Israel. But I think we sometimes forget, you know, we are a very pro-Palestinian country, but we are very unusual, globally. We are very vocal about our position.
Are we anti-Israeli?
Anti-Israeli state.
Yeah. Are we anti-Semitic, as the Israeli government would actually claim we are?
Absolutely not. I think that's horrific misuse of the term. We're against what the state is doing. And as a nation, we feel extremely strongly and passionately about it. And I think we're all really sad about it. But we have very limited power. We do. And I think we have to accept that too. So I'm glad that RTE have spoken up. And I didn't know that they've been promised a wider discussion. That's good news. But like you, I would suspect that it's not going to lead to anything. And Israel will play a part. And I just wonder, is our only option not participating in the Eurovision?
Okay, Joshua, what do you think?
There's a bit of nuance to this story that is easy to miss, and it is easy to miss, but the EBU represents broadcasters, right? CAN is the state broadcaster of Israel, K-A-N, and they're the people involved in this. They are under constant attack from the Netanyahu government because they are seen as, they would say they're telling the truth. They're trying to be objective. They're trying to tell the Israeli public the truth. So just in the way that Tory governments have attacked the BBC, Netanyahu wants to defund CAN, wants to shut them down because they're one of the few remaining main broadcasters who actually try and do journalism, which Netanyahu absolutely hates. So I think in some respects to kick them out would be a bit of a kick in the teeth for people and for the many, many Israelis who don't support Netanyahu, who do believe peace is possible with Palestinian people and a two-state solution, all that kind of stuff. I understand why people would not want to see Israel take part in a song contest, given what's going on at the moment. But I think we have to think as well about the Israelis who really, really want to tell Europe and the rest of the world that they don't support it. They don't support what their government is doing.
Okay.
The performer is actually was a victim of the Hamas attack, right?
And does that mean you think that performer was deliberately chosen for that reason?
I just think it means that it feels inherently political.
That's the weird thing, that the Eurovision has always been political. You know, going back to the revolution in Portugal against Salazar, the Salazar regime, the starting signal for that was the first broadcast of the Portuguese entry into the Eurovision of that year. That was the signal for the army to come out and start a revolution. There's so many examples of politics coming into the Eurovision. Like I said, it would be very hard on these many millions of Israelis who want to be a Western, who want to ally themselves with Western democratic values. I think it would be very tough on them to just say, you can't take part. I think we play into Netanyahu's hands as well, because he wants to tell people, see, they all hate us, they're all anti-Semitic, they don't even want us in a song contest.
Okay, but do boycotts in this work? Because, let's face it as well, sometimes we've used boycotts to positive effect, but are there times when we use boycotts because it just is something that, how am I expressing this, is that it's a partial view of the world, a boycott maybe, whereas other people don't agree with it because they don't agree with what the reasons why you state you want to boycott.
I don't agree with cultural boycotts usually. I actually think that the arts need to be protected as a free space. So like the cancelling of kneecaps, gigs, all that, it's the same thing, you know. But I feel like, as you said, Joe, the Eurovision is so political. I feel like this is a little bit different. And I feel like I do have an issue with the kind of business as usual of the Eurovision, given what's happening.
When is it on?
Very shortly. Next week, next Thursday, Wednesday and Thursday, I think, are the heats. And I think the final's next Saturday night. Yeah.
So in other words, so that means there's not a chance they're going to be thrown out.
No, no, it's not going to happen. And the EBU has for years tried to resist this. And let's remember what the mayhem that the Israelis caused backstage last year and got the Dutch guy thrown out of the Eurovision. You know,
remind me, what was that about again?
Well, I don't know if you remember. Sorry, this is maybe a bit too much. Basically, last year, the Israeli delegation were accused of being incredibly heavy-handed and of throwing their weight around backstage and of accusing people of being anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli and all this kind of stuff. The Dutch entry, I can't remember his name, his dad, Papa Europe was the name of the song, great song actually. He basically got into some sort of row. There was then accusations thrown at him that he'd been bullying people and all this kind of stuff. He had to go home, so the Dutch went out and the Israelis stayed. So it's, again, unfortunately, you cannot separate the Eurovision from politics. It's just impossible.
Okay. Jennifer Horgan, as a mother and as a secondary school teacher, what do you make of what Simon Harris has been saying about a possible social media ban for under-16s?
I think it's wonderful. He's saying that it needs serious consideration. So I don't know what that means, but I would...
It sounds like it's the first time he's realised it's an issue.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this for years.
Absolutely. But look, it needs to happen. I was always, you know, as a teacher, I was a bit irritated by the focus on schools, because schools are probably one of the only places where kids are kind of separated from their phones. So it's all the other hours of the day and the night that we need to worry about.
So instead of concentrating on the policing in school, where most of the time, even if it's not into various pouches that's been provided, there's a degree of control.
There is.
It's what's happening outside of school is the issue.
Absolutely, and particularly at night in bedrooms, you know, children coming in really tired and unable to learn. And and I think parents are struggling, myself included. It's tough. It's really hard with teenagers. So we need to cut it at the source, and we need, you know, the social media, the actual tech companies to pay the price. And obviously Australia's already started the process. So it seems,
if it could be done there, then presumably it could be done anywhere.
Well, yeah. So, and they're going to develop whatever they're going to do to assess the age of the user or whatever. So they're going to develop that technology. So I say we just look to Australia, follow what they're doing, and do it as quickly as possible.
What do you think, Joe?
If there's one thing that this government can do to protect the mental health and the wider society and our well-being, it's this. It's make sure that kids are kept away from smartphones for as long as possible, and they have to be, as Australia are saying, have to be 16 or over to get on social media. It is vitally important, and I really, really hope this isn't just one of those things where the government talks a good game, Irish politicians talk a good game, and then, it got a bit difficult, or Facebook pushed back, and they have their headquarters in Dublin, so we couldn't get them angry, or whatever. We really should do this.
Sorry, could that be an issue? I mean, that... We already are fearful that the European Union might put tariffs on services from the United States, and maybe advertising revenues would be under a special tax. That's one of the things apparently under consideration. The Irish government is terrified by that because we would lose money. If there were Ireland and other European countries were to do this, I can imagine the MAGA mob would be up in arms about suppression of speech, freedom of speech, even though we're talking about children.
Yeah, well, not to be too nice about it, but F them, like, you know, they can, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. And whatever, what about the money that we're going to have to invest in mental health services for kids who go through?
That's where we're getting the tax revenues off them for, isn't it?
You have the mental well-being of your entire society on one side and some tax revenue on the other. We can take the risk with the tax revenue.
Do you think, though, Jennifer, is this doing serious damage to mental well-being?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, the level of bullying, it's Snapchat in particular is what I come across, and TikTok, those two.
Why those?
Well, Snapchat, it's so hard. Like, you know, the pictures, whatever, disappear straight away. It's really hard in terms of tracking what's happening.
So it's easy for a bully to use.
It's easy for a bully, yeah. And there's all this language around it that we don't know. And we're playing catch up all the time, both teachers and parents. I would say as well, though, adults need to change their behaviour too. And I'm very much talking about myself. Like, I am terrible. My sister had to have a word with me recently. I've gotten so bad with my phone, and I'm doing it around my kids. So it needs to be a whole society effort.
Come in and try and talk to you in the kitchen, and as you're cooking, you have the phone in one hand and you're cooking something in the other hand, or you sit down at the kitchen table and instead of having a conversation, you're catching up on your emails or you're checking on your social media. And look, I'm saying this about myself as much as anything else.
That's it. And I think my work is kind of fragmented. I do lots of different things. So it's checking email, it's checking... And it's terrible. I'm setting such a bad example. And the thing is, I'm not conscious of it. And it's only when my husband or my sister or somebody else points it out, I cop on.
Do you? Do you not react against them and tell them?
Oh, I do that too. Yeah.
I don't know. Would you be confident that this will be, that there's a global backlash?
I think there's definitely global consensus building. And if we do it with the European Union, then it's the European Union, which is the biggest trading bloc in the world and has immense power. If we can force Apple to get rid of their stupid chargers and everybody to go onto a C charger, an Android-style charger, we can do this. All we have to do is ignore the MAGA crowd and just tell them this is happening. And if you want to work in Europe, you have to abide by these laws.
Okay, it's many years now since plastic bag levy was introduced in Ireland, so about 2 decades plus at this stage, and which was to encourage people to use the bags that they bring back or recyclable, or use paper bags, which would be less environmentally damaging. How can Pennies decide to actually charge for the, I think, well-known brown paper carrier bags that it gives you for whatever you buy in Pennies?
Well, it's happening all over the place. They're one of the last, I think. And I've reacted very badly to it, being told that I need to pay 15 cent for a paper bag. But they're right, really.
Why?
I mean, we do have to change our behaviour because it's single-use baggage. It's not necessary.
It's not plastic. It's biodegradable.
But it's still energy, isn't it, to recycle it or to rework it.
To produce it.
They have to transport it,
everything.
All of it. Yeah. So there's no need.
Pennies are the only bags you see people getting these days are Pennies. And it's good on them for doing this because it's not such a huge deal. If you can bring your bag for life to Aldi or to Dunn's, you can do it for Pennies as well. It shouldn't be such a big deal.
But I would like to see the money that they get from the 15 cent charges. I'd love to know where that goes. It would be lovely to think that they would invest it in something to do with sustainability or environmental concerns.
Now, you're both living from Cork, living in Cork, but there's a Dublin story I want to ask you about. I don't know whether either of you have observed Dublin City Centre's only public toilets. They were put in at the top of Grafton Street at the corner of St. Stephen's Green 5 years ago, and they've been shut down, apparently on the basis people are not using them enough. I think people were using them during COVID when they were having pints outside pubs when you couldn't go in and then needed a toilet when they couldn't go to the toilet in the pub. But it seems now that there just isn't a demand for them.
Yeah, and so apparently as well they cost too much, they're saying. So they're saying it costs €400,000 a year to run them. To me, that doesn't sound like an awful lot of money for what is a basic right, a basic need. I would wonder, well, if people aren't using them, why are they not using them? Do they not feel safe there? Are they not clean enough? What's going on? For me, proper investment in public toilets is vital. And I think, you know, a lot of women are in town shopping, and not to stereotype, but I look around, I'm in town a lot, and women need the toilet quite often, more often than men. You know, for everyone, it's a basic right. We shouldn't have to go into, and it's not fair in businesses either for people to constantly dripping and asking to use the toilet in cafes, shops. But yeah, we need more of them, but we need them to be a places we want to go, you know, where we feel safe. And
any in Cork, Joe?
There is one, but it's kind of kept secret on the Grand Parade. It's behind a door and you have to kind of know it's there and you have to go up and press a button and the guy looks at you in the camera and he leaves you in. There's another one in Fitzgerald's Park, which, as you know, is about a 20-minute walk from the city centre.
Yeah.
There's not really. And it's been a big kind of issue, and especially during COVID, and it became really apparent. One thing we should have in Ireland, which they have in London, are the kind of stand-up men's urinals that you just kind of walk up to and actually make great sense, especially in areas in London where they have them, where you have a lot of pubs and a lot of nightlife and stuff like that. I know it's no good for women, I understand that, but it would actually take a lot of pressure, I think, off. Or it would make a lot of sense to have these kind of, as they call them, pissoirs, I think they call them in France, don't they?
Yeah. Okay, just one last brief one, which I think is important, and this is CSO figures suggesting that children in one-parent families and those who live in private rented housing are less likely to be able to pursue hobbies such as swimming or go on an annual one-week holiday than their peers in two-parent families who own their own home. What do you reckon about this, Jennifer?
Yeah, I think it's really important information. You know, I think we've kind of gotten to a point, a lot of us sort of assume that people can go on holidays, and we talk about it like we're all going on holidays. I was asked yesterday, actually, where am I going on holidays this summer?
It's a sort of a conversational gambit made on an assumption that you're going away somewhere.
Yeah, and it's, and I, as well, I have to say, to do in terms of schools, the school trips that are arranged for kids in state schools, like going to Paris shopping, going skiing, that I have a huge issue with. The assumption that families can afford to send those kids and those, you know, it's really putting a pressure on families. So, yeah, it's just a reminder to us that we're not all in the same boat and that there is a divide.
There's a hidden Ireland that we don't hear much of, and it's people. There are people who are very well off, very affluent, and doing well, and good luck to them. They're working hard, and they have two new cars, and they have a nice house. On it. There's a lot of working families that are basically struggling to pay, on average, €2,000 is the average rent now in per month in Ireland. There's a lot of families who are struggling just to put food on the table, to get the kids to school in the morning, to pay for the insurance for the car, the petrol or diesel, and they can't afford what are luxuries these days, like holidays. And we don't hear from them because there is an awful lot of very well, of comfortable people as well.
Joe Shea, Jennifer Horgan, thank you both very much for being with us.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
And we're back, folks. It looks like Jim from sales just got in from his client lunch and he's got receipts.
His next meeting is in 2 minutes. The team is asking, can he get through his expenses in that time?
He's going for it. Is that his phone? He's snapping a pic. He's texting Ram.
Jim is fast, but this is unheard of.
That's it. He's done it. It's unbelievable.
On Ramp, expenses are faster than ever. Just submit them with a text. Switch your business to ramp.com.